Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from BFM 89.9. I'm Mira Sivasudi. Now, after 8 years on the air, we're bringing the Bigger Pictures Health and Living to you, live, on the ground. A whole day with the experts, debunking myths behind heart disease and diabetes, addressing our love affair with food. Of course, George will be there talking about sperm. So join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on Saturday, 2nd of April. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
You're listening to At The Movies. I'm Umar Pagan, I'm Pagan Pagan. So what the folks in Hollywood refer to as the summer blockbuster season is officially upon us, with the first massive release, the much-hyped, much-anticipated, star-studded Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. The Zack Snyder follow-up to his 2013 disaster Man of Steel is supposed to set up the massive, sprawling DC cinematic universe. Joining me today, I've got a little round table going. I've got fellow movie critics Ian McNally and Bahir Yusuf. Embrace yourselves, folks. This is not going to be pretty. Boys, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me. And for the record, I actually like Man of Steel.
Okay, then. Yeah, yes, yes.
Yep. Okay.
We're not judging you.
One of three.
Yeah.
So, all right. What we're going to do with today's episode is we're going to kind of break it up, because we're going to dedicate this hour to talking about Batman v Superman. The reason being that I think it's important to get into the finer details of how something like this can go so wrong. So I thought we'd talk about the movie from a cinematic perspective, and then we'd address one of the most important factors when you're making a superhero movie, which is to talk about it from a fan perspective, which we all grew up with the characters, so we are fans of it. First up, before we, well, lay the smack down, for lack of a better phrase, what did we like about this film?
The short list.
Anyone?
Jeremy Irons. Jeremy Irons is very good as Alfred, I thought. I would love to have seen more of him in the movie.
I liked the Batfleck.
Batfleck was good.
I liked the Batfleck. I will say I had reservations about it. When it was first announced, I was one of those guys that were like, no, that's a bad idea. But I liked him. I was proven wrong. And one of the few things I was proven wrong about.
I think for me, that was the big thing. Ben Affleck. The movie starts with him. It really does feel like a Batman film more than anything else. And Ben Affleck fits the role. I mean, he bulked himself up. I didn't think his pretty boy face could handle a broody, broken Batman, but I think he pulled it off quite well.
He's got a great chin for a cowl, though.
That cowl's quite wide as well. Like, it's a real bulky, stocky thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and if there's one thing that's good that comes out of this movie, it's that if he does actually get to do his standalone Batman movie, I would definitely still go see that.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
I will definitely watch Jeremy Irons as Alfred if someone else wrote him. I think I had some reservations with that, but I'll get into that when we talk about the fan stuff. So looking online, a lot of the other movie critics from all over the world seem to really enjoy Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. What did you guys think?
Well, she's there and she's gone. She's not in the movie an awful lot. What is there, she's not given enough time to mess it up. So I guess I'm hopeful for Wonder Woman, which is already in production. But she doesn't have that much to do, so it's like she can't really mess it up.
Yeah, no, totally, I agree. I mean, it's for me, it's that kind of test of a character. If you remove the character, does it stop the story? And I think if you removed Wonder Woman from Batman versus Superman, the movie would have been moved along just fine. I mean, they would have found a different way to do the boss at the end. But at the end of the day, without the Wonder Woman character, the story would not have faltered, would not have stopped. It would have moved on.
And so here's the thing. A lot of people did say they enjoyed Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman. They called it a highlight of the film. For me, it felt like a little bit of a cop-out in the sense that, yeah, she was great. I mean, I enjoy Gal Gadot. I think she plays whatever little character she had to play in this film. She does it well. But it seemed like the only reason they included her was to have that Trinity money shot, which we all saw in the 2-minute trailer.
Yeah.
that seemed like the singular purpose for having her in, because throughout the film she's in pretty dresses.
Yep.
She's also the subject of what is probably one of the most sexist lines in a superhero film, when Batman Bruce Wayne walks up to her and goes, "In that dress, 9 out of 10 men will let you do anything they want." And I'm just like, oh God, really?
Yeah.
We're going there.
This movie doesn't do very well in those stakes at all. There's also Bruce's unnamed bed partner at one point who just is there in the background, literally just background dressing.
A soft beggar. focus leg is all we see.
All you see, him reaching over going, oh my God, it's another woman. And then
grabbing a glass of wine
and going and just downing that.
And then heading off.
And then moving along. Yeah.
Yeah. Are we done? I mean, like, even in the good bits, we seem to have swayed into
critique.
Yeah. But that's about it, right?
Yeah.
I can't genuinely think of anything else.
There's some nice action shots, but by that point, you really don't care. I think that's the problem.
So, okay, let me give the movie this much. For the first maybe 4 to 5 minutes, when I'm not sure where the movie's going, when he's doing these quick cut scenes, right, between Bruce Wayne's youth and then a perspective of the Superman Zod battle only from his perspective. Mm-hmm. I quite enjoyed those scenes. I liked seeing Wayne running to his building to save his people.
Yeah.
This contrast to a 9/11 disaster where a building's coming down, everyone's running away, and Bruce Wayne's running into it. And that's hero. I like that it's Bruce Wayne and not Batman as
well.
Yeah.
And those bits filled me with a little bit of hope. There was a scene at the very opening of the film where they decide for some unknown reason to retell yet again the story of the killing of the Waynes.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, is that like a studio stipulation? Like, if you're going to do a Batman movie, you got to tell that bit?
I don't know, because it's been told better in the Christopher Nolan and in the Tim Burton movies.
Yeah.
And Tim Burton spends all of maybe 3 minutes of it, right? Mm. And it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I rewatched it today, and it looks very, the theater even looks similar to what they have in the new one. And it's just like, yeah, they don't need it. It's something similar to, I mean, I always harp on about Grant Morrison when it comes to comics, but he did this with All-Star Superman where it was one page and it was 6 or 8 panels. And it was doomed planet, desperate parents, you know, last son, Earth. It just literally small phrases and it's done and then you move on. Mm. But here it's lovingly handled and then they delve into the cave and then straight away you have your first moment of like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah. I mean, there's one moment in that scene which I was a little bit thrilled at. And like you said, it goes very, very quickly downhill from there. And that's when the unnamed killer of the Waynes points his gun at Pa Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And for a moment, if you're watching it in 3D, it's in soft focus and all you see is the barrel of the gun coming out right at you. And I thought, whoa, that's kind of cool.
Oh.
Because it looked like the gun was pointing at me.
I forgot the film was in 3D almost immediately.
Oh.
I didn't notice anything 3D about it at all.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's just the point that, you know,
you think it's just a thing
that now.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even think about it.
That was the moment, and I had these brief, fleeting moments within the first 10 minutes of the film that I thought we were onto something, mm-hmm. and then no.
No.
So let's talk about the no then.
Where do we start?
This movie does fail, though, from a cinematic point of view. After this movie, I went home and I just put on, I have all of Zack Snyder's movies and I put them on and I just start flipping through scene to scene, 300, Sucker Punch, Watchmen, even Man of Steel. And I realized, and it just dawned upon me, that the biggest problem with Zack Snyder is that he tries to do spectacle, but he just can't do story.
Absolutely. This movie just seems to be a collection of scenes that happen one after the other, none of which build any kind of character. These are all just people doing things, like the Lex Luthor character in this. He just wants to kill Superman. That's it. There's no kind of indication of why he wants to do this. There's some mention of his father and things like that. Superman's not a character at all. Batman gets the most character development, but even that, it's just Batman. There's no new spin there. You know, the fact that this is a Batman who kills, but there's nothing. They could have explored why he breaks that rule, because he breaks it pretty flagrantly when he's driving the Batmobile. But there's no exploration of that. It's just, that's just it. And it's just a setup to cool things to happen on screen. And these are things that don't even look cool, but just the concept of cool. It's cool to have Batman with a new Batmobile. It's cool to see Superman catching a satellite launch, a failed satellite launch. It's cool. Oh, it's just not cool at all.
Let's talk about that. Lex Luthor, I guess. Well, the one thing that always comes up every time a superhero film is put to the screen is the portrayals of these iconic characters by new actors.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you like Michael Cera as Lex Luthor?
I would have preferred Michael Cera as Lex Luthor. For a moment there, I thought you meant Michael Rosenbaum from the Smallville television show, so I was losing my mind. No, but actually, apparently someone on Twitter told me he based his portrayal on Max Landis.
Oh, you're kidding.
Apparently that's what the rumors are. But and Max Landis can be intensely annoying. But
so
he's
for those of you who don't
know,
Max Landis is the son of John Landis,
yes.
Right? The famous director / screenwriter,
yeah.
Filmmaker. And he's also a big superhero geek. He's written a comic series called Superman American Alien.
Yep,
and he's also a screenwriter and director.
He did a YouTube video about the death of Superman Returns with like his friends like Elijah Wood and all this kind of stuff in it.
That's
right. He can be a little grating. He's very enthusiastic about things, but the thing with Lex Luthor is that it's just all for show. It's not for show as the character, as the movie. He's just saying weird things and having tics and mannerisms, but there's no point behind it from a character's perspective or from a movie perspective. There's no reason why he has to be that way. Like, it's not to, unless it's to make your enemy of the villain of the piece intensely annoying. I'm not threatened by him. I'm not rooting for him. You know, the best bad guys are the ones you root for a little bit. This guy, I want him to get out of the movie. I want a pillar to fall on him and just to stop being around because he's just intensely annoying.
It was almost as if, like, he was confused. Like, he wanted to be the Joker instead. He's got that, you know...
Or he thought he was in Dick Tracy.
Or he thought he was in Dick... Yeah. That was just... His version of Lex Luthor was not the version that, or at least I grew up with, in the cartoons, in the Christopher Reeves movies, in the comic books, right? This Lex Luthor just wanted to kill Superman just because.
Yeah.
There was no reason for him to hate Superman. In the comics, there was always a point to it. It wasn't just because. There was a point of fear, of control maybe, of losing control. But there was that. There was always that logic to it. Whereas this guy is just like, this Lex Luthor is just off the wall crazy for no reason.
And not crazy in a good way cinematically where you can enjoy it.
Yeah, no, not Heath Ledger crazy.
No.
This is just like, will you please stop talking crazy?
Yes.
Well, that being said, we have no idea what the motivations are to any of the characters in this film.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a movie with a lot of justification but no motivation.
Absolutely. It wastes time on pretty things in the screen and on waste screen time on showing slow-mo things.
Yeah.
But doesn't decide to put the motivations of the characters like Lois and Clark.
Actually, let's talk about that for a second.
They try and show their relationship, but it's one scene.
No, yeah. It's not that. I mean, we know from the first movie that was already a stretch. From Man of Steel, it was already a stretch that Lois and Clark are in love because they don't spend much time together at all. Even if you take the superficial approach that she is somehow in love with this man who is super and he is in love with this feisty human reporter that he's never come across anyone like before.
She nearly spends more time with Jor-El in that movie than Kal-El.
She does.
She does.
She's in love with Russell Crowe.
That Russell Crowe's dreamy.
No,
so this happens in this film and what it does is it spends the entire film telling you that they're in love because every time they see each other, someone has to say, I love you, or I'm in love with you, or I don't think you can love me and be you at the same time. Everything is spelt out for you and it's not shown, it's not earned.
Yeah.
And the problem is, it feels like someone's written a script basing it on the fact that, hey, you know Superman, you know Lois Lane, they've been in love for 75 years, so you'll understand why they're in love.
Mm.
And yet, as a trope in this film, it's not earned at all.
No, and the whole movie is unearned. Like, there's just moment after moment where you're like, oh, I'm supposed to feel something here. All I'm feeling is I quite like the Hans Zimmer soundtrack again, but there's no actual feeling behind it because I don't care about these characters.
Yeah.
I just met some of them.
Yeah.
Well, Ian, Hans Zimmer soundtrack, come on. It was so in your face.
Oh, yeah. No, I like that about the previous one. I think there's a certain, shall we say, dream sequence, and Junkie XL is the guy did the sound
for Mad Max
and he just reused some of that music. It sounds very much like,
well, the entire dream sequence takes place in a desert scene as well.
That's true.
And it just does come across as being totally Mad Max-esque.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned dream sequences, there were a few of those completely randomly out of the blue. Batman gets two in a row that just completely just annoys me.
But these ones, they're trying to provide characterization by shortcut. They don't tell us anything about the character.
But that's poor movie making as well, in the sense that you're trying to set up future movies.
Yeah.
And then you have these dream sequences where anyone who is not a fan, but not a hardcore fan, will have no idea what is going on in these dream sequences because they do not tie in to the movie in any way whatsoever. That being said, just take it back to Avengers Age of Ultron. Not the most popular of Joss Whedon's work in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was quite divisive in itself. I mean, it did make a lot of money, and I think it wasn't awful, but people were divided compared to the first Avengers. Yet again, Whedon had to set up Phase 2, or Phase 2.5, and he uses dream sequences. But the way he ties that in is that Scarlet Witch induces these dream sequences, so it's actually a narrative plot point in this current film.
And throughout that film anyway, the characters are recognizably the characters you know, whether the ones in the comic books or the ones on TV. I don't recognize these characters at all. Yeah. Superman is a hole in this movie. There's just like, he's not a character at all.
He's not in this movie.
No, he's not in this movie. Batman fares slightly better, but even, you know, we've talked about Lex Luthor, Wonder Woman just is for a publicity shot. The whole thing is like that. Even the plot doesn't turn up. It's a series of events that happen, but it's not like, nothing's organic. People get themselves into and out of trouble in the same breath, which is pointless. Or people suddenly develop telekinesis. Certain conversations don't happen, and yet people have to go and get the next MacGuffin to set up the third part of the movie.
Yeah.
But no one's discussed that. It just happens because it needs to happen in order to have the cool shot later.
So let's talk about the first 40 minutes of this film, because the first 40 minutes of this movie feels like a fan response video to every piece of criticism that Man of Steel had. And they seemed burned by the reaction, not just of fans, but actually every critic who reviewed the last movie.
Mm.
And they felt that they had to spend the time justifying it over and over again. I mean, even right down, I mean, this is not a spoiler, but even right down to the final climactic battle, they mentioned the fact that there are no civilians in the area like 4 times in 5 minutes. Like,
and
Anderson
before that,
Cooper,
Superman very clearly takes it out of town.
Oh, Superman takes it out of town. Anderson Cooper mentions it. One of the military people going, oh, he's landed on this island. It's uninhabited.
That should have been done in the first movie, and that's the way you handle having that amount of property damage without risking too many lives, especially for a country as traumatized by 9/11 as the US. You know, these are things that are going to come up. These are things you factor in. Doing it this time is just, you know, it's like the reverse of throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, you're right in a lot of ways, Umar, about how they just feel like they have to justify everything that but it's not in a sportsmanship kind of way. It's not in a, yep, you're right, I have to fix this now. It's a like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. I knew I had this planned all along. Kind of, you know, very, very reactive, very defensive. It wasn't a natural way.
It wasn't a mea culpa.
It wasn't a mea culpa. It was just like, we're taking this out of town this time. You know.
I think coming back to those first 40 minutes, I think what they were 20 minutes too long.
This movie was like 2 hours too long. Guys,
this is a movie that's 2 hours and 30 minutes long and can't factor in character moments and can't string together a simple plot. You know, the basic plot of this movie is Bruce Wayne is on the trace of something, a MacGuffin, and he kind of wants it, and Superman's having some trouble. There's a very easy way to get that 30 minutes, just have them cross each other's paths once or twice.
And talk.
And have a conversation. Build the characters that way. But instead, we get cool shots of bats flying out chimneys. And, like, you get 3 minutes with this cop you're never going to see again wandering around a house. Why?
It's interminably long.
Yes.
And what's interesting is the entire plot of the film plays out in the 2.5-minute trailer.
Yeah.
Every beat plays out right up till that battle with Doomsday at the end plays out in that second trailer that you saw.
That's something that I feel is very old-fashioned. Makes a movie feel very old-fashioned when people used to just buy the comic book rights and not understand the characters at all.
Yeah.
And they didn't understand the marketing either. Like, when you see, I still reckon that the people who did the Suicide Squad trailer live on an island somewhere far away from DC, because that is a masterclass in storytelling and a short trailer, and it doesn't give anything away. We still don't know who the big bad guy in that movie is. In this, everything, if you've seen any trailer, you know everything.
Yeah.
And that is crushing disappointment. You mentioned the Marvel movies earlier. Avengers Age of Ultron, a lot of the trailers led with Tony Stark walking over the bodies of his fallen comrades. And you were like, wow, this is going to get dark. And then it wasn't that, but it was still surprising and it was still interesting. And you were still wondering what was going to happen next and how they were going to tie all this up. With this, it's like, I know exactly who's going to turn up, because I can tell by that. We're at the halfway stage now. If we haven't seen the thing we're going to see, then we're basically going to get that later and that'll get wrapped up. And then, oh, I've got an hour to wait.
And for the first half hour, we've been, well, for lack of a better phrase, tearing apart the joyless, narratively vacant, self-indulgent tripe that is Zack Snyder's Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. We're doing an extended review today, if only to take a look at how something so big can go so colossally wrong. We've spoken about the movie's cinematic failings, and now we're going to take a look at the movie from a fan perspective, because all three of us in this room grew up reading Superman and Batman comics, and we are fans of these characters. We've grown up with them. I mentioned Alfred earlier, and I love Jeremy Irons, and I thought his performance had the right amount of gravitas. My only problem was the way they wrote Alfred, in that Alfred was supposed to be, or is supposed to be, the moral conscience of Batman, not just some old dude who was wisecracking about Bruce Wayne's bad habits.
A little and snarky. Well.
He was a little snarky, yeah. But that's all he seemingly did.
Yeah.
Apart from the trailer speech.
Yes.
That, you know, this is what turns good men cruel speech, which is just, again, shoehorned in there because it needs to be there.
Well, so that, and that's the biggest problem from a fan perspective, right? We need to know why Batman is suddenly motivated to kill. He kills a lot in this film. Mm. He brands people with the bat sign, as we see in the trailers. And yet we don't know why, because it seems to happen over this 18-month period from when Superman arrives. So does the fact that this alien god, if you will, from outer space arrives, suddenly send Bruce Wayne over the edge and makes him a cruel psychopath?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
and that's the problem.
And that's
none
the problem.
Of us know.
None of us know. You know, the movie, the first time you see him and he's tied up a criminal and the brand is there and you just go like, wait, what? Why is he doing that now, right? And then the newspaper get on it and they show this whole bit about, you know, about him branding his criminals and all that. But again, why? Like, this is not the Batman I've grown up reading. This is not the Batman of any of the movies that we've seen.
It's not even the
Frank Miller Batman, right? Which is, in some ways, the most violent Batman interpretation, I guess.
Even he doesn't really kill him.
No, he uses
rubber bullets. Yeah. And it was just like, why?
But the reason I think is why is because Zack Snyder's a magpie. He takes these things but has robbed them of context. If you think about it, there is a shot of the Robin costume covered in graffiti, but he just looks at it once. That's it. Which we've seen in the trailer. You're not told, is that Jason Todd? Is that Dick Grayson? Is that any of the other people who've been Robin? It's just there. And there's a throwaway line as well about 20 years of fighting criminals in Gotham and how many good guys are left, which is something that would be very much at home in The Dark Knight, but removed of that context and thrown into a movie with a brand new Superman, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
If Superman was the, you know, impetus for superheroes to come out of the woodwork, then Batman wouldn't exist. If Batman was the impetus, where are the other heroes? You know, all this kind of thing just doesn't make sense. It's, again, he's making a collage that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's less a collage and it's more the pictures on a board with string hanging between them, like, yeah, a psychopath's apartment.
I mean, I was telling Uma earlier about how this movie just feels as if somebody walked up to Zack Snyder or Goyer, whoever wrote this script, and says, you know, I read this really great Frank Miller comic book about when Batman and Superman fight, and then Zack Snyder goes, oh, that sounds amazing. These guys fight, right? And then the researcher goes, yeah, do you want the comic? Zack Snyder goes, nah, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know?
And or he's then, got one page.
Yeah.
And he's got the one page with the armor on it.
With the armor on it, right? He just picks up all these pieces that just sounds cool on its own, but doesn't earn them, doesn't build to them, doesn't show anything other than that bit.
Yeah. For me, Man of Steel proved that Zack Snyder didn't understand Superman, or David Goyer didn't understand Superman. What's more, this movie proved that he doesn't understand Batman either.
And I think it proves that Warner Brothers don't understand their own properties either.
And that's what concerns me the most, because they have a slate of like some 20 movies coming out over the next 8 years.
And I think the best thing they can do on Monday is give Disney a call and say, can you make our movies for us?
Could you loan us someone to just write this thing for us? Because we have no idea what we're doing right now.
And that's the biggest problem, because if anyone who's familiar with Batman, even if you're not a big fan and you've read the comics, there's one thing you can glean from whether you've seen a cartoon, a single episode, or even the movies: Bruce Wayne / Batman is usually the smartest person in any room. Mm. He's the detective. He's got no powers. He's bulked himself up. He's got some fighting skills, and he's got his brain and his wits, and that's why he's such a crucial member of this Justice League, right? Mm. When he's surrounded by Green Lantern, got alien rings, Superman's got crazy ass powers, Batman carries his own because of that.
He's still the scariest person in the room.
He's still the scariest person in the room. Yeah. And in this movie, what we need, what you need as a creator, is to craft a compelling reason as to why these two superheroes, these two good guys, are fighting one another. And in this movie, the only thing we have is somehow Batman has read a whole bunch of press reports about Superman.
And gets threatened once.
And believes it.
And then the fight is actually the impetus of somebody else.
Correct.
And they could easily solve it with 3 to 4 words. 4 words, I think it was, I counted.
Yeah.
That could have solved everything.
That could have solved that one, yeah.
Right away, and they don't. Also, where they end up in that fight is completely implausible. They like there's a MacGuffin they need to use at the end of the fight, and where it's put makes no sense based upon where the fight would happen or how to plan that out. Batman's a planner. You're saying all that?
So Batman's an idiot. In this film, he's an idiot.
There's a point where the tide turns in Batman's favor, and then it turns back. And at one point, he puts his hand up and steps back, like, you know, someone who's shocked is when, like, a Jack in the Box opens. I'm like, Batman doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Batman's a man of resolve, of, like, infinite resolve. He would knuckle down and he would keep going. But it was a weird moment that stood out to me. It's like, this, again, is not Batman.
Yeah. And that, I think, is the biggest problem with this film, that the characters we know and love aren't the characters we know and love. And I wouldn't mind so much if either Zack Snyder or David Goyer, the writer, had a strong enough vision of these characters that they really felt passionate about and wanted to put forward, but they don't even have that. It's what you said. It's that magpie thing. You're picking from different generations of DC writers and comic book artists, and you're kind of merging it all into one fruitless movie.
Yeah, the reason why The Dark Knight works and the climax of The Dark Knight works is because these are two friends who have come to believe opposite ends of an argument, and the only way to solve it is to come to blows. These are two guys, like, this is literally the Ant-Man Falcon fight in Ant-Man. Like, it has all the reasons for the same, like, it has the same flimsy
reason for a fight. It's a big old miscommunication.
Yeah. Whereas in Ant-Man, it's played for laughs.
Yeah.
It literally is, it makes this motivation risible. It makes it a joke.
Yeah. And you can buy that argument, because when you're reading that comic book and you're reading the reasons why Superman and Batman are fighting one another, you can pick a side and you can say, I'm with Superman, I'm with Batman. In this film, there is no side to pick because they're both fools.
Yeah. I'm with the editor if you could make it a little bit shorter.
So my other problem with this movie, from a fan perspective, is that it is a superhero movie. And I mentioned at the top that it is absolutely joyless.
Yeah. Well, where Alfred gets a few laughs.
No, but where are the heroes? No one in this movie is a hero. And I understand what Zack Snyder is trying to do. He's trying to do this deeply philosophical deconstruction of what it means to be a hero. What is that line from The Dark Knight? Be a hero for long enough and you become the villain? What's that line? Something like that, right?
You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
That's the line. Thank you very much. And I think Zack Snyder is trying to build on that, or Nolan's trying to build on that, because he's a producer in this film. But none of them are likable. Superman's selfish throughout this whole movie. He's just thinking about himself and nothing else.
The balcony conversation with Lois, he's actually moping.
Yeah.
Superman is moping.
And I think you've mentioned it twice now. Superman is a void in this movie.
Yeah.
He's a void. He's just there in this blue suit, hovering in slow-mo, and he's pulling a ship through ice.
Yeah, I don't know why he was doing that.
I don't know why he was doing that. That was just a complete random
aside. That's probably one of the biggest cool image. Let's put that in.
Yeah, and it was just, but he himself as a character, as a person, as a hero, as a superhero, is nowhere in that movie. Throughout the movie, I kept getting lost. It's as if scenes were not finished. It's as if no thought was finished. Everything was, you go one way and then it just shifts gears and you're moving to a completely different story with completely different characters, and you never come back to the earlier one. It's no thought is finished in this movie. They just keep jumping along.
With Lois Lane, I think suffers the worst. It feels like pages of her script have been torn out.
Yeah, it's like her story is just completely missing. You know?
And also, what's more, it's 2016. Give Lois more to do.
Yeah.
I mean, in the comics, she's always been this incredibly feisty character. In this movie, she does nothing and she needs to be saved by Superman at least 3 times.
She does actually do something, and it's plot specific, but it doesn't get into the plot. You know what I mean? It actually has an input on what's going on. It actually has an impact on that. But she never tells anyone about it. No one asks her about it. It just carries on this weird parallel path. The same with Bruce Wayne's investigation into what has to be one of the worst investigation scenes in any movie, where he essentially types into the search box the exact word he's looking for, which happens to be like a term that for an underworld person, and it's the first result on the hard drive.
It's one of those things where, like, wait, did you even try Google?
Like, I laughed at that. I think a few people laughed.
I was about to. I was just like, I was going to shout in the cinema. I was like, really? You didn't Google it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, detective or not, you just, you have to tend to Google first off, right? I've got another thing, though. At the beginning of the movie, there was a bit about Lois is again in some desert somewhere in trouble. And the cameraman she was with, right, they get stopped by rebels and all that. The rebel takes apart the cameraman's camera. I'm sorry, it was a film camera.
Yes, actual film camera.
Like he, I'm like, wait, what? And then for that, and then later on in the movie, for Perry to go on about how this is not 1938, this is the, you know, digital age, 2016, blah blah blah. But you just send a cameraman with film.
Who uses a film camera?
And the other thing is that apparently in the DC Cinematic Universe, anything you need time to track anything, the trackers that you can build there, the smallest you can build them are as small as your thumb, and they have to have a flashing light and make a beeping noise.
Yeah, because if you didn't, the camera can't catch it.
Yeah.
You can't see it on...
But you pick up a small thing and say, oh, look, a bug.
Yeah, because Zack Snyder can't see it if it was just a little dot.
They're the same size as the bugs in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., where the joke was, it's the 60s bugs are this big. The other Henry Cavill movie.
That's probably where they got it from.
Oh, maybe Henry Cavill just thought, this thing looks cool, I'm going to keep one.
Yeah, because you reuse the same plot.
Yeah. And then Zack Snyder goes, oh, that's
because
really
Batman's
cool.
Tracker is the same size. Yeah, it's like true. Giant sign hanging off the side of a truck.
Yeah, that thing going like, bunk, in the side of the truck. And then nobody heard that?
Beep.
Yeah.
Beep. It's like, can you guys hear something?
Yeah. Even once the truck had stopped in the warehouse, and I was like, I was sure somebody was going to see it.
Hey, look.
Yeah. What is that beeping red thing on the side of the truck that just blew up when we were carrying, you know, secret stuff on? Nope. Nobody decided to look.
Hey, here's an interesting thing, folks. I wouldn't take your kids to see this movie. It's not a Superman and Batman movie for children. And I think
I've heard friends go to morning screenings this morning, full houses. So the opening weekend is going to be big.
Well, opening weekends are going to be big.
Yeah.
I have no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to have legs. And also, what's more, the reason Marvel movies make so much money is because it is a movie that you can go as a family to.
Mm.
And that's what they need, and repeat viewings.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're going to get this.
Not for this one, I think. I think. I mean, at the beginning of at the end of last week's episode, you and I were talking about, we were joking about how maybe we'd go catch it twice or four times. I don't think I will. I think I've seen it once and I'm done.
I haven't got 2.5 hours to waste, man.
Yeah, I've got stuff to do.
So I've got one more question for you guys, and it's about movies in general, movies like this in general. Ever since the Star Wars movie came out, I've kind of developed this idea that actually I'm breaking away from this notion that movies need to stand alone. That we're living in this golden age of serialized films. We're 12 movies into a Marvel Cinematic Universe. They stand alone, yes, they do, but they exist as a greater whole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with that, and I think it should be a new way in which we look at these movies in particular. So even as critics, when we're writing about it, when we're reviewing it, I don't think a problem should be, oh, you know what, this movie spends too much time setting up the next one.
Yeah.
But I think it has to be done well.
Yes.
We saw it being done well in The Force Awakens. We saw it really well in
Iron Man. The original Iron Man movie set up nicely. And at that time, they didn't know what they were going to do.
I was going to say.
But it was just enough.
Yeah.
And when people refer to things in different, you look at the recent Daredevil TV show, there's mentions of other characters.
Yeah.
If you don't know who they are, it doesn't matter.
You
can get the context straight away. Yeah. But, you know, if they in the Marvel TV shows, they're always referring to the incident, which is the Avengers movie. But all you need to know is the incident was bad.
Something happened.
People died.
Yeah.
Those are the ways you can write those things, as opposed to shoehorning in all these things into this movie where it's not. They're trying to leapfrog Marvel, which you can't do.
Yeah. Marvel's put their back into it, right? Yeah. They've spent a lot of time. They put the legwork, right? They've really just spent the time. They've invested in it and everything, and it's paying off.
Yeah.
And DC are really hoping to just jump
to the front of the line,
jump the gun, and just move on to like, oh yeah, here's our big, you know, I'm showing you the Trinity, right? And what?
You know, well, you're showing the Trinity in the trailer.
You show the Trinity in the trailer, right?
The Trinity being Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman. But
as a result, that moment feels utterly flat in the film.
Yeah, completely lost.
You're like, oh, and there's nothing to replace it. There's nothing to build up to after that.
No, it's just a poster shot.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, guys, I guess, with the critical failure of this movie, the only winner really is Marvel.
Mm.
because yeah. they've got a Versus film coming up in exactly a month, on April 28th. They've got Captain America Civil War, which essentially pits Captain America and Iron Man against one another. And if you read the comics, and also if you've seen some of the trailers, you understand there's a much clearer motivation as to why these characters are doing what they're doing. It's almost Democrat versus Republican. And it seems like Marvel's onto something. And DC's failure could only mean victory for them.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Russo brothers, right?
It is.
Yeah. Dude, the Winter Soldier came out of nowhere to be an amazing spy movie with Captain America in it. This is like a brawler movie with Captain America in it and also Iron Man. I think, again, Marvel's marketing team is very clever. What we're seeing in the trailers isn't the whole thing. I say the action is all very clear, but events will be out of sequence. And, you know, there was moments in Age of Ultron where, again, trailer-wise, it looked like Tony Stark and Steve Rogers were starting to come towards blows. But it never really happened. Like, they're going to develop it properly. They're going to earn it properly because they have done all the time.
Yeah, I think Civil War will be, it will almost be like that thing where you just go like, this is how it should have been done. You know, from a DC fan point of view, which I am, I'm just going to watch Civil War and go, we could have had that. DC could have had that, right? Had they done it right, spent the time, got a better writer, right? And from a Marvel point of view, it will always just be like a, haha, we got it right. You know, and that'll just burn. But they would have done it right, and they will do it right. At this point, I don't know.
I can't see them messing it up.
Yeah. And you know what? After 13 movies, they've earned it.
Yeah. Yeah, they have. You know, the characters all developed. You know where all the... Yeah, you know where all their backstories are. You don't have to spend 20 minutes on retelling the story, right? Mm-hmm. You move along, just get into it. The only thing they'll have to set up is they'll have to set up the allegiances, which would be great. You know, watching this team pull itself apart based on ideas and ideals, it's just going to be great, right?
And it's still going to be fun.
It's going to be fun.
Because the Marvel movies are fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. DC, they're not allergic to it.
All right, folks, so now you're listening to a podcast exclusive. This was not on broadcast, and basically it's still myself, Ian, and Bahir, and we're going to give you some spoilers and essentially rant about what we really, really disliked about this film. But because it's spoiler-filled, you have been warned.
If you think you haven't seen the movie yet, don't listen. Stop. Stop now.
Stop now.
We're really going to make you not want to go watch this movie.
Right now.
If you haven't already.
If you haven't already.
Over the last 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Spoilers in 3, 2, 1. Superman dies.
And completely unearned.
Unearned. Unearned. Completely unearned. Unearned. Unnecessary.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Can I just say
that? Let's go back.
Go back to a second. Back in the 90s, when DC decides to kill Superman, they introduce a character called Doomsday, right? For the longest time, throughout his life, throughout his career, Superman has always fought people that were smarter than him. Mm. Lex Luthor, Brainiac, whatever. Mr. whatever, right?
Mix-a-pick-a-lick.
Oh, there we go. And with good reason, because you cannot fight Superman with brawn. And so when DC finally decided to do it, they're like, you know what? Let's do something clever. Let's create this character called Doomsday, and it's the one time in the history of Superman you've got someone who's stronger than him, and he just can't take him down. And when he finally does, it results in the death of Doomsday and himself. Mm-hmm. And the reason they did it was, for a year, we did not have Superman.
Yeah.
We had all of these comics and we did not have Superman. And so it just made you realize why Superman stood out, was unique, was a different character to all of those other superheroes out there, and you missed him. Mm. After watching Man of Steel and after 2 hours and 28 minutes of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, I'm not missing Superman. When he dies, the climax of this, when Zack Snyder decides, hey, I'm going to have Doomsday. If you have Doomsday, you got to kill Superman. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I feel nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. And you know what? I saw it last night. It was one of the screenings. It was a 9:15 screening. Cinema was packed. At the beginning of the movie, there were a couple of guys that went hooped and hollered at the DC logo. But when that scene came up and Superman dies, there was just nothing in the room. There was no shock. There was no change of tone. Nothing. Unlike The Force Awakens. Right? Like the room, there was a gasp.
You
right?
heard the gasp.
You heard the gasp.
Even though you kind of saw it coming if you were a Star Wars fan.
No, absolutely. But I saw it twice. The first time I saw it, I was shocked. My jaw was on the floor. Second time I saw it, immediately the day after, my jaw was still on the floor. My mom grabbed my hand and goes like, what just, right? And that was the thing. It was, the room just gasped and just tensed up. Whereas this one, everybody just went, oh.
There's a thing that happened, because this movie is a series of things that happened.
Things that happened, just because they happened.
Yeah.
There is so much in this film which is the function of bad writing. And we'll get to the climactic Superman v. Batman battle in a second, mm-hmm. but one scene that really annoys me is, once again, I've lost count how many times Superman decides to go on walkabout to discover himself, because he's brooding again.
Yep.
And he's on a mountain in Antarctica, and he comes upon, I don't know if it's Antarctica, I don't know where it is, and he comes upon the ghost of his dead father.
Who's lifting rocks.
Who's lifting rocks
in a pile.
Which, it's just there to confuse you.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's not like he's actually are the rocks a metaphor for all the lives that Clark has saved? You know, it's none of that. It's just he's throwing rocks. So you don't think it's him. So when that Kevin Costner turns around, you go, "Oh look, Kevin Costner!"
It's just
looking like his character in Criminal, coming soon to a cinema near you.
Yeah. It's just something for him to do.
It is. And no, but what kills me is the moral of the story. And he tries to tell this moral. And it's supposed to be this big metaphor, right? Because the idea in this throughout this whole film is, can Superman save people and let some people die, because that is the cost of being a hero, not you can't save everyone all the time, etc. Yeah.
Or let people lose their legs.
Right? And so Pa Kent, Jonathan Kent, tells this story. And he tells the story that when I was a kid, there was a flood that hit our farm. And me and your granddad, we diverted the water and we saved the farm, and I got myself a good slice of hero cake. And later we found out that that diverted water went over to the Lang's farm, you know, your ex-girlfriend's farm, and completely wiped it away, killed all their horses. And then you're expecting a moral, you're expecting a principled response, and there is nothing.
No.
No.
And Superman just goes,
fair enough.
When did the nightmare stop?
No, there was a before that, because he goes like, oh, I still hear the horses in my sleep
when I went to bed, the horses screaming in my sleep,
yeah.
And Clark / Superman go, when did the nightmare stop? And he goes, when I met your mother. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It's not just that, right? But he goes, when I met your mother. And then, end scene, let's move on.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? Really?
That was a completely unnecessary scene. We could have just had, I don't know, more of the dark future, or more of the two of them over, like you said earlier in the radio show, the two characters overlapping a few times.
Yeah,
would have been great. Yeah. But this scene was just like, why? And what is he? Is it hypoxia? Like, has he not heard the story before? In which case, it makes no sense as a moral to him. It would make actually more sense for Russell Crowe to tell him a story if it was a part of Crash Technology or something like that.
Mm.
This was just like, what?
No, that means you've heard the story, it's in your head because it's a hallucination, at which point in your hallucination, your dead father tells you he misses you, which is really kind of self-indulgent on the part of Clark.
Yeah.
He has no idea if his dead father misses him.
Hmm.
Yeah.
He's probably glad to be shot at the brat.
Although, let's be honest, he wasn't really that talkative in this movie.
Okay, and so that's the other big problem. Superman's not in this film, but every time he's in this film, there's absolutely no script involving Superman. So you don't necessarily see him as an intelligent or clever character.
Or a character at all.
Or a character
Once
at
the
all.
Fight happens is when he actually turns up. That's the first he really actually is in the movie, because then he's actually got something to worry about, for reals. He's got to get, he wants to get his mom, and he's got to convince Batman of it. And there's Henry Cavill. He's acting.
Yeah.
He's trying to get a point across. He's doing it badly. He's not a very good communicator. He could probably just ask Batman, someone's got my mom. Do you want to give me a hand?
Yeah.
Or they've got my mom. Four words.
Four words. Sorted.
Sorted out.
Throw in an extra two. Help me.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Help me, please.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's the kind of thing of like, why isn't that an automatic thing for Superman? Like, he's... Lex goes, I've got your mom, I'm using this kitchen timer just because I'm quirky. I've got a kitchen timer, guys, right? And then he says like, oh, bring me the bat's head. And Superman goes, oh, I hate you, but I'm going to do it. Really?
Yeah.
Really? He flies over to Gotham and goes like, I have to kill this guy because Lex has got my mom.
He can hear Lois Lane in trouble in, where was it? It was like Somoria or something like that. It wasn't Somalia. It was the misspelled Nairobi.
Yeah.
It was Nairobi, Africa.
Yeah. He can hear Lois Lane in trouble.
Yeah.
several continents away.
Yeah, yeah.
However, he can't find his mom.
No, no, he can't.
Because she's across on the other side of the river.
But she's, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about the ending.
Yeah.
The ending of the fight between Superman and Batman. That's what we're waiting for, right? This movie is called Batman v Superman. They've got a big battle. They've hated each other for 2 hours in this film.
For at least 2 minutes.
For no reason.
In universe time. Whatsoever.
In universe time.
Whatsoever.
For no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. Right? And how do they resolve this? Ian, how do they resolve this?
By their mothers share the same name.
So there's this golden age comic quirk that just so happens.
I've never thought of it before.
Okay, yeah. So that Batman's mom is called Martha, and Superman's mom is called Martha as well. And yeah, it's a golden age comic quirk. It's there.
Yeah.
And yeah, you might forget it because, you know, you call her Ma Kent.
Yeah.
And we make very few references to, for some reason, Bruce Wayne's mother. We're always focusing on his dad. But yeah, anyway.
But in this movie, when he goes in one of these dream sequences, he goes to the
crypt.
He's at the mother's side.
And a bat monster comes out.
Yeah, which I thought was weird because we're almost always at Thomas Wayne. Right?
You thought that was weird?
So for that to happen later on, it almost feels like they've kind of built up to it.
But Superman says they've got Martha.
Yeah.
And then Batman says, "Why did you say that?
Yeah.
What's going on?" And it's like,
"Why did you say Martha? Are you talking about my ma?" Yeah.
I just realized what makes sense. Batman is completely knocked out of his skull at that point. He's wearing a helmet, but he's still getting knocked around. Yeah, he has no idea what's going on.
His brain's
just
like...
That's the only part of the movie that makes sense. His brain is jelly.
His brain's just like egg yolk right now.
He's forgotten his mom is dead. Yeah. Where's mom?
Where's mom?
But it actually would have made more sense, like from a character perspective, if Superman had said, "They've got my mom." Or my mother, they have my mother.
Yes.
Or save my mother.
Yes.
That would appeal to him more than just Martha, the whole thing. It's another dumb. The end of this movie is just dumb.
And no, wait. It doesn't stop there, dude. So they say the Martha thing, at which point a flip switches and they're buddies.
Best friends.
What did I say? A flip switches? I mean, a switch.
That's how
flips.
Angry Umar is.
Yeah, that's how angry I am. A switch flips, right? And they're buddies, right? And they
start joking. I thought she was with you.
No, immediately.
Yeah.
So he pulls him up. He stands up and he goes, "Come on, mother. I got to save Metropolis because there's something going on with Lex." And he goes, "Don't worry. I won't let Martha die tonight."
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wait. You were just beating the living crap out of each other and you wanted to kill each other.
Yeah.
And but just like that.
Also, how does Batman know what Martha looks like?
Yeah. And how does he... She's one of the terrorists. Martha's one of the terrorists. Yeah. How does he know that it's linked together to the second-rate hitman guy?
Yeah.
How does he... none of this is there.
Yeah.
It's not there at all. Like, someone else asked on Facebook about, like, "I seem to be missing things." Like, no, you weren't missing them.
No, no.
They're just not there.
They're just not there, yeah.
Lois throws the spear away and then goes and gets it, but no one's talked to her about we need the spear or this thing is from Krypton.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, when she, during the fight, she goes and picks up this spear that's got a shard of kryptonite on it, right? And what does she do? She walks around the corner and sees a pool of water and throws it in there. It's fine now.
No, and also, that's the most ridiculous thing ever. You've picked up this last piece of material that can kill the love of your life. And what do you do with it? You throw it into a pool.
Yeah, you're just like,
there's a pool in a building? What the hell?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what that,
is an indoor bath?
Yeah, I don't know what that was about.
It's just bizarre. And then she goes up on the roof, looks around for a bit, and then goes, "I should probably get that spear.
That thing, I need that thing."
And then she goes down, and then she gets caught. This is what I was talking about, people getting in and out of jeopardy for no reason.
For no reason, yeah.
You know, if Superman had run over and said, "Where's the spear?" Or, you know, and they all panicked and stuff, they could have sorted it out. It's just not...
No,
it's not there.
Nobody's talking to each other in this movie.
It's like when it's like that moment when someone points out in the Avengers that no one's wearing earpieces, but they're talking to each other all the time. You know, you're like, oh, she just what?
It's only because Tony Stark has super miniaturization technology, my friend.
Yeah.
But then it's again like, you know, she doesn't say it's a trap to Clark. She doesn't give intimations that somebody is plotting against Clark.
Yeah.
You know, she could have.
And she knows all of this.
She knows it, yeah. But instead, she just makes eyes at him, make goo goo eyes at him, and he broods a bit. Like it's so weird. Why? Withholding information like that is like, it makes you scream at the screen. It's like, what? By the way, it might be a trap. Look out over there.
Yeah. Be careful.
Yes.
It's Lex. He's the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so weird.
Nobody's talking. It's like, why? How are you not saying that? How is that not an important piece of information?
And there's so much of, like you said, there's so much of that not going on for them to change to buddies straight away. Yeah. It's like, you could have trimmed half an hour out of this movie from just establishing shots that went on too long. Or there's at least 5 minutes you could have put back in this movie by just eliminating some of the gas going into Clark's lungs. Like, that stuff is beautifully animated. Yeah. Someone poured their love and their heart into Clark Kent breathing in kryptonite
really
fumes.
Just sort of like worked that out.
He and found it looks, it looks so
looks
nice.
Looks great.
I looks fantastic. Absolutely. It's just that...
completely pointless.
Yeah, it's pointless. Why?
Yeah. Show it to us once.
Yeah.
Great. Move on.
Yeah.
He's got three bullets. We've already established that. Move on.
So one last thing about the setups, all of the setups that are happening in this film. There are numerous flashbacks. There's what's called the meta-human thesis, which is essentially Lex Luthor seems to have worked out that there must be other super characters.
Because there's this show on the TV network on the CW called The Flash.
Correct.
And he reckons that there's meta-humans there, so there might be meta-humans here.
There must be. But what happens is Bruce Wayne manages to hack and get all of Lex Luthor's hard drive information.
From an open port, by the way.
Yeah.
Can we just say that?
From an open port next to a kitchen.
It's not even a USB. It's just a weird, like, TV signal thing.
Yeah,
it's bizarre.
No, but it was not that. He was just like, this is the server room, right? And he goes, found it. Open wire. Oh, just happened to fit my thingy, right? Oh, damn it, 7 minutes. I got to have to go back upstairs.
Do you know how many cables I have to bring with me anytime I try to do any of this
right?
stuff? It's a big backpack. I wouldn't fit it in a nicely tailored suit.
And he was just one of those things where, like, oh, no, this doesn't fit. He was just... it just happened to be outside.
And you know what? I can suspend all of that disbelief. I can.
Okay.
Up till the point when they try to give away the fact that there's a character called The Flash or Cyborg or Aquaman or Wonder Woman, and he logs into this hard drive and there are folders. And these folders have the logos of Wonder Woman, Flash, Cyborg, and Aquaman.
Yeah.
So they aren't superheroes yet. And yet... Lex Luthor has all of their logos on file.
No, Lex Luthor designed them. He's got he's got a great PR team that's put together this whole thing. They've got like imaging, branding. They're all good. They're good to go.
Aquaman is so hot right now.
Aquaman is in.
we should say as well, Warren, spoilers, there is a flash forward to Darkseid.
Dark side.
But those are definitely parademons. There's very clearly one that hits him over the head.
Yeah. We see a little bit of it in the trailer.
Yeah, there is the giant Omega symbol.
Yep.
And it's Flash wearing armor essentially pops through. I thought it might be Wave Rider or even their version of Rip Hunter popping through time to say Lois is the key, which is a message which has... were you able to hear him all the time? He said, Lois is the key.
So here's the thing.
I didn't hear that bit.
Lois is the key. Am I too early? I'm too early. Come find us. You have to come find us, right? Is what he says. And this is the thing. There's this flashback, flash forward, flash whatever scene where you see the Flash. Mm. And it's so poorly executed. Mm. The only reason I got that was because I was reading the subtitles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It said, like, The Flash says or something.
Oh, no, it doesn't say The Flash says, but it had the come get me and stuff.
Because
you can't make out...
it is that actor?
That's what everyone seems to think it is. Mm. It's got Ezra Miller in this really weird, wispy mustache.
And he's wearing a Domino mask, and he's got weird, bad armor on him.
Yeah. Whatever that is.
Because that was a moment where I thought, oh, this might actually go... No, it's not going to be mentioned ever.
No, it's not. No, yeah, it's done.
It's not referenced. That's it.
That was all you got.
Yeah. Batman doesn't even... it doesn't have any point to it. Like, you know, it's not even Lois isn't like, it's not like Batman steps in. If Batman had stepped in at a moment later on to protect Lois, that would have been great.
Or connected the fact that this is the Lois that Dream Thing was talking about.
Yeah.
Because he's not met Lois yet.
He's not met Lois yet, right? Could have just been one of the girls he slept with.
Lois is the key.
She's got the secret.
All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for coming here and talking to us about this.
Wow.
Well, there you go, folks. That's been our spoilery bit of this really, really long podcast version. Yet again, let us know if you do go to see Batman v Superman. It is in cinemas all across the country. And tweet us, Facebook us. We love to have these conversations. Even if you like the film, we really want to know why. Really want to know why. You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9. As promised, on this special extended podcast, I'm giving away free passes to watch Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, courtesy of the good folks at Warner Malaysia. To win yourself a pair of passes to watch the movie, all you have to do is answer this one simple question: what is the next movie coming up on DC's slate of superhero releases. Here's a hint, the release date is in August 2016. Just drop me a line on uma@bfm.my with your answer. The first 5 correct responses will win a pair of passes, so get to it.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or black forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.